Okay, so I'm here in our studio with Labrador MP Yvonne Jones. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So what brings you to Nain today, Yvonne?
Well, I came to Nain for a few days this week. A couple of reasons. One is to participate in the Inuit Youth Summit, which is Inuit youth from across Canada. But also we have people from Greenland, so it's really an international event, I guess, at this stage. You know, to talk about issues that are important to all of us as Inuit in communities, and that's really focusing on language and restoring language in our and talking about reconciliation and what reconciliation looks like for Inuit, and also dealing with some of the more challenging issues that our youth are faced with, whether it be dealing with suicide in communities and the loss of loved ones, or about really transitioning, you know, in our culture. We transitioned more away from our culture. Now we're transitioning more back to what our historical cultures have been for Inuit across the north. And so this has been an opportunity for me to spend a couple of days with youth and to listen to what their opinions are and their views are around some of those issues.
So what do you see as the main challenges facing today's Indigenous youth?
I really believe that the strongest piece we have is that youth today are inspired and encouraged to lead a path forward for those that are coming behind them. When I sit in a room and listen to them talk, it's really about empowering each other to step up and to do more to preserve language, to preserve culture, to ensure that we have healthy communities, that families are healthy. And, you know, I have tremendous admiration for the kind of young leadership that we have in Inuit communities. The challenges for them, obviously, is overcoming the trauma that many of their parents and grandparents have had to suffer through. And that trauma was not individualized to the person. The trauma that mom or dad or grandma or grandpa went through extended to the family and extended to the community in many cases. So it's really the tough challenge for them is to be able to deal with that trauma in and around their own lives and their own communities and to move forward from there. I think a lot of them are reconciling the loss of loved ones. There's probably not a young person in any Inuit community across the north that has not been heartbroken and pained by the loss of a friend, of a sibling, of a community member or a classmate to suicide. And talking about those issues and understanding how to identify a person that in your life that is troubled is a very important part of that. So I think for many youth, all in not just Inuit youth, but Indigenous youth in particular, they really want to learn and understand more about the epidemic of suicide and what to look for. How do I identify when my friend is going through pain and trauma and is unable to reach out to someone? So, you know, these young people are so intelligent, they're so smart, and they have such a tremendous understanding of each other, and the love they have for each other is so evident when you sit with them and listen to them talk. So I know their challenge is huge, but I have tremendous confidence that they are the generation of young Inuit of the Arctic that are in subarctic regions like Labrador that will be the first to lead a good path forward. And so that makes me very happy. And obviously the reason I felt it was important to take the couple of days out of my schedule to be here with them and to sit in the room and listen to what they have to say.
So what's the Liberal government doing about these challenges, like to say help them deal with trauma and that sort of thing?
So as a Liberal government, we have been, again, trying to take direction and leadership from Inuit communities across the north and Indigenous communities across Canada. And we've listen very clearly and very intently to the voices of Indigenous people. As a government, we were the first to move forward with the Commission on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and to start that inquiry. And while it's had a bumpy road in getting started, it's necessary that it be done. And it's going to be a long, bumpy road to see it completed. It's not a happy inquiry. Mm-hmm. It's an inquiry that will propose many obstacles and many bumps along the way, and it's going to be strong, resilient commissioners that are going to have to ride those bumps in order to accomplish the goals and the mandate that's been set out for them. But missing and murdered, in the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls is just a small part of it. And for us, it's about implementing the calls to action for truth and reconciliation. We know that the sad period of history for many Indigenous Canadians, those that surround residential schools. When I became the Member of Parliament in the Liberal government 2 years ago, Labrador was left out of the residential school settlement. It was the number one priority for me. My mother had been a residential school survivor. I had grown up in Labrador. Most of the families that surrounded me were children of parents who had been to residential school or grandparents who had been to residential schools. And it was absolutely heartbreaking to know that when the government of Canada under Prime Minister Harper gave the apology to residential school survivors and their families and provided that compensation and that legacy of apology, Labrador was left behind. And for the people around me, that was hard for them to reconcile because they suffered through what was a dark time in their history as well. Dark days for them as young children, growing up in Labrador and in those schools. And it was so unfair. And I knew that the pain was not going to leave, that there would be no healing for those families. And if the parents couldn't heal, the kids were not going to be able to move forward either. So that was a number one priority for me. It was one of the issues that I took on as soon as I was elected, meeting with the Minister of Justice, meeting with the Minister of Indigenous and Northern Affairs, meeting with the Prime Minister's office to say these things are wrong. And, you know, I will always owe a debt of gratitude to the Prime Minister Trudeau for being the one to say, let's take this case out of the courts and let's settle with the survivors of residential schools in Newfoundland and Labrador. They deserve that. They are no different than any other Indigenous Canadian that have suffered under the school system. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, when the settlements were paid out to the survivors of residential schools, and it was never about the money, but for many of them, it was about recognizing that they had went through a very dark period in their lives. And as young children, they were removed from their homes. They were taken out of their communities. They were told that, you know, you can't speak your language. You can't practice your Inuit or Indigenous ways of life, that those things are wrong, that they were taught to be embarrassed by who they were. And, you know, so those things were very, very difficult. And I know 2 weeks ago, just in talking to my own mother, you know, there was like a weight that was lifted off her to know that somebody recognized what had happened to us as children. And I talked to Toby Obed right after I ran into him in Goose Bay, and I want to signal out Toby Obed because when I was in MHA, before I was even in federal politics, he was one Inuk in Labrador who called me and told me his story. And I never forgot that. But it was stories like his and many others that really inspired me to work hard on this issue and understand it and the fact that it was in my own family. I remember being in Hopedale not too long ago, maybe a little over a year ago, sitting with root flowers and in her home and her sisters. And they talked about when they were all taken and sent away to residential school and what it was like and the trauma that they suffered just from being away from home, but the trauma of all of the other things that followed in their lives that they had never been exposed to before, you know, the abuse and the physical harm and so on. And, you know, unfortunately, people like Ruth never lived to, you know, receive the settlement, but knowing that it was taken from the courts and that it was being settled, I hope at least gave some people like her before they passed on the sense that the right thing was being done for them. The pain of those who passed away without ever knowing, without ever being recognized, what had happened to them is sad and unfortunate. And I hope that their children can reconcile themselves, the abuse that their parents have went through under the residential school system. So people ask me all the time, you know, will the Prime Minister make an apology to the people of Labrador and Newfoundland? Because the former Prime Minister apologized to all others in Canada, but left us behind. And I don't have the answer to that. But I can say that I'll continue to encourage him to make that apology. I think it's the right thing to do. And I will certainly continue to work to ensure that there is a legacy created, one that is fitting and tells the real story of residential schools and of Indigenous and Labrador people. And I don't think we should be afraid to tell that story, because that's all a part of healing. And now the Government of Canada and our department has appointed Judge Jim Igliordi to lead the process of creating that legacy and that historical documentation of residential schools in Newfoundland and Labrador and what the impact has been on people and families. So we're moving in the right direction on some of those issues as a government, but it's not a short road, it's a long road. And it's like someone said to me at one time, Yvonne, you know, Prime Minister Trudeau and your government always talks about there's no relationship more important to them than that with Indigenous people, and we want to build a Crown to Inuit relationship or government to or nation to nation relationship. But, you know, we're not seeing things change fast enough. And I think what people need to understand is that this is not like a 12-week pilot project, you know, or even a 12-year pilot project. This is a lifetime of change that all Canadians will have to go through. And there will be some that will embrace it more quickly than others. But regardless of where you are in this country, I mean, recognizing the first people is the respectful thing to do. And it's a respectful thing to do in any country around the world. So as Canadians, we should not be any different, and we should be embracing this. So I think the success of government in that relationship will be reached much quicker if Canadians reconcile with Indigenous people within their own relationships as well.
Do you think that money is a solution to the problems with to the fallout of the residential schools? Or?
Money is never, in my opinion, the solution to most things. However, it is the means by which you can create better solutions. And, you know, when I look at things like the 60 Scoop, like residential schools, you know, the inquiry that we're doing into missing and murdered Indigenous women, yes, it all requires financial resources. And the Government of Canada realizes that. And when we make commitments to do these particular necessary pieces on behalf of Indigenous people, we also got to recognize that it all comes with a price tag. And it's as important, in my mind, the healing of people and creating healthy communities. It's every bit as important to invest in things like mental health services and suicide strategies as it is to invest in housing and clean water. You know, it all comes together. It all has to be a package. And so Yeah, it requires financial investment, and it requires a lot of financial investment. When you're dealing in the north, like we are, everything comes at a higher price. So, you know, for government to just say we're committed to a relationship with Inuit people or with First Nations or Métis people, that commitment comes with a financial price tag for all Canadians. And, you know, those are the realities of the work we need to do.
And how much do you think compensation is going to help residential school survivors?
I think the compensation is more symbolic than it is anything else. So I think it's the pain and suffering. It's a compensation of pain and suffering. And I think in making that compensation from the Government of Canada to residential school survivors, it's allowing them to, they come to a point of realization that, okay, somebody understands what I went through. And maybe they don't understand, but they're trying. They've at least recognized that there has been pain and suffering. They've at least recognized that I lost the opportunity to be a child. I've lost the opportunity to grow up in a family, to be a part of a community in the same way. I've lost my culture. So I think, you know, while paying someone $15,000 or $100,000 for, you know, the abuse that they've suffered and the trauma they've suffered in their lives doesn't necessarily change that part of it and the misery that they've been through and continue to go through. I think what it just does is it says in a way that we recognize what you went through and we want to try and compensate for some of the pain and suffering. But I think for most survivors of residential schools, the biggest piece for them has been the recognition. You are recognizing that there was something done to me that was not fair and not proper, and I have suffered immensely because of it, and my family have suffered, and my community has suffered. And I really believe that's the takeaway for most survivors right now. And, you know, I think for them, without doing this, without the Government of Canada intervening and doing this, while every other Canadian that was victimized through residential schools received that recognition and acknowledgement, and they did not, I really felt that they had been pushed back even more. So at least this helps them move forward further than they were a couple of years ago.
What are your thoughts on, you mentioned missing and murdered Indigenous women. What are your thoughts on the ongoing problems with the missing and murdered Indigenous women inquiry? And how do you think it should be handled going forward?
I really believe that when the Prime Minister announced the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, he did so wanting to change how citizens, how people, how Indigenous women and girls were being looked at and viewed in communities. And I really believe the inquiry was fully intended and still is to look at what were the injustices, why were there these injustices, and how do we change this? You know, and so it's really about lifting up Indigenous women and girls, but also lifting up the support systems and the safety systems that they need in communities across the country, and at the same time educating all of us as Canadians. And, you know, the commission got off to a very rocky start. I think we can all agree to that, but we also have to realize that their task was monumental. You know, they weren't asked to teach the next Sunday school class or, you know, to provide a lecture at a symposium. They were asked to dig very deeply into the history of this country as it related to missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, into what have been some very complex cases, some stretching back 3 and 4 decades. And they were asked to do so in a cultural environment that has been very fragile in Indigenous Canada. And in most cases, probably under threat for many, many centuries. So, you know, they had a monumental task, and they still do. So, you know, getting off on a bit of a rocky road is expected. It's unfortunate that we've continued to have the kind of disruptions that we've had with commissioners resigning and you know, some indifference within the commission. However, I really do have confidence in this inquiry to serve families and Canadians in a good way at the end of the process. And I say that because I really believe that the individuals that are there, that have stayed there, that have said, I'm part of this commission, I want to get it right, and I want to do what's right for these families, I believe their heart is in the right place, and because they care, they're in the right place. So I have more confidence in the process now, I think, than I probably did, you know, going back a number of months, because I really believe that we've been able to, or they've been able to, define what their real role is and what their engagement needs to be in that process. And I think that's important. And also, I believe that families were expected to be impatient, and because they've waited a long time, you know, and all of a sudden you had a prime minister and a government of Canada who says, okay, we've listened to what you've asked and we want to do this for you. And of course, they waited a long time to hear that. So because of that, they wanted to see action immediately, and they wanted just to roll immediately. And I think that in that wasn't going to happen. You needed to ensure that this inquiry was going to be culturally sensitive, it was going to be educationally informed, it was going to be, you know, the ability there to provide for services for those that were going to trauma in their lives had to be provided for. So there was a lot of steps that had to be incorporated in that process. Mm-hmm. So are we on the right road? I believe we are. And I don't ever agree that because everything doesn't run smoothly that we give up on it. You know, I feel that it's better to try and make some mistakes along the way than not try at all. And so I, right now, I have tremendous confidence in this commission to do the right job.